Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kay Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz. Today someone posted on some site, they were wondering when the Bay Area, the phrase the Bay Area, turned into the Bay.
Huh.
Because I guess they grew up in the city. Or in this area. I think in San Francisco. And it was always forever in his mind called the Bay Area.
Right.
And it wasn't until like maybe the last year that he's really heard it kind of shift to the Bay. And I just noticed that you said the Bay's number one. And I think it's like officially the Bay Area's number one.
Well, that's what it says on our website.
So I was sort of like,
congratulationspinetree.com.
Anyhow.
But I think I started saying that about our podcast because of Wild 94.9, the Bay's number one hit music station. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been here long enough. I know they didn't call it that
I
when
have
my
to
mom
say,
lived in the Bay Area.
It's definitely, it's abbreviated. I mean, come on, saying the Bay Area all the time is sort of it's much easier to cut out that four letter word.
What other bay is there? Monterey Bay.
There's a lot of bays.
San Pablo Bay. But Big Bay, Chesapeake Bay. If you live by Chesapeake Bay, are you in, do they say the Bay Area?
They might.
Sorry, Chesapeake Bay.
We're just fucking you up.
Where even is that?
I wonder if it's also because people are talking about not just San Francisco.
Sorry. No answer to that. Anyhow, it's almost the end of the year. And at the beginning of the year, we said we would do our top eight, doing great, for our top eight exhibitions. For Maysoon, we'll be doing exhibitions
and performances. P.S.
And I will give my top eight lectures. I would like to say these are not necessarily comprehensive. So with performances and exhibitions, we have Maysoon.
Woo! Directions given, directions taken. Organized by Michael Swain at Southern Exposure. All right. It was an ongoing series of performances where...
So it was like a daisy chain.
It was a daisy chain.
Yeah. So one person... The first person does Jim Melchert's directions. Then the second person does the first person's directions. Then the third person does the second person's until you get all the way back to Jim Melchert.
Is that how it worked?
Again. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And there's a book that
I wasn't
was,
necessarily paying attention to that particular detail. It just seemed like there were five people who were invited in this round and they performed these directions.
Anyhow, you liked it.
I went to maybe three. How many performances were there total?
24.
24 performances?
Well, 24 nights? Performers.
Right.
Over six nights. Four people performed each night.
So I really enjoyed that series, the idea, and also a lot of the performances. And the other one, also performance driven, also at Southern Exposure, not trying to single anyone out here. It's just the way it worked out for me this year, is 4x40, which was another performance festival kind of thing organized by artist Chris Sellers, and that was 40 artists performing a 4-minute performance piece. The 4 minutes included, I think, 1 minute to set up, 2 minutes to perform, and 1 minute to take down. Or if you could do it all in 4 minutes, fine. So I think that was flexible, and that was actually pretty fun as well. It was sort of a wild grab bag of experiences. You know, a lot of students were performing, but then there were also a lot of very established Bay Area performers. Cliff Hanks was in it. Another performance / exhibition I really enjoyed was the Parking Lot Art Fair.
Yes.
This year.
We both were really into that one.
Organized by Jenny Sheriff. I just really appreciated yet another sort of way to see art, right? Out of people's trunks, in a golf cart, in a U-Haul truck, just anywhere, everywhere. Also, it's sort of response to the art market fair happening right next door. It's free. Anyone could be involved.
That dude got fucking the FBI called on him for having the fucking
ISIS flag. That's
right.
That guy was awesome. Anyhow, I thought that was a great idea.
Totally.
Really fun. I'm not like wedded to whether or not it happens every year. There was a show at Royal Nonesuch. I can't remember when. It was called Twice in a While with Cara Levine and Jess Wheelock. Really enjoyed that show. But in particular, I love Jess Wheelock's work.
Yeah, that was the one that blew my fucking mind.
That
you
one,
told me about it,
was,
and I went and saw it, and I was like, holy shit.
So a series of videos where the viewer that were interactive, or where the viewer was implicated in the action in the video. And so, for example, there was one video where I believe it's been a while since I saw these videos.
She's trying to put candles together.
Are they candles or matches?
Candles.
They're candles. Birthday candles. And she's like in with the wax melting, is like burning her fingers basically.
Right.
And so you can basically pull the fire alarm thing
that's
on the pedestal, and then a bucket of water flies at the artist or at the person in the video.
And then something happens in the video.
It's crazy.
It is like
totally crazy.
Amazing.
And fucking awesome.
Good job.
Also on the list, and this is a recent exhibition at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, Radical Presence, Black Performance and Contemporary Art. Yep. I just think this show was really important. Brought together a lot of incredible artists, younger and more established artists, certainly, or more recognized artists together in the same space. Just really incredible show, I thought.
I almost had a couple of those talks because they had the series of talks, holding court.
I didn't make it to any of them.
Those in the talk,
which is terrible.
In the talk list.
Yeah.
There were some good ones.
And then there's a few additional performances that happened recently. I don't know if this might be a conflict of interest on my part. But do I care, really? Two awesome performances organized by Valerie Imus at Southern Exposure. Maxipad Templum de Mysteries.
Now talk about that, because we've never talked about that on the show.
With Jennifer Wofford.
Yeah. I didn't really... Okay, so it's a performance in the Rose Garden that is by my house.
The Rose Garden in Oakland, kind of up sort of on the way to Piedmont a little bit, right?
Yep.
Which I'd never been to. And it was basically an homage to women, but also specifically like our menstrual cycles, be really honest.
And I didn't realize that there is a pond or something, a reflection
There's a pond
pool.
That is shaped like a fucking maxi pad with wings, people.
No,
with
I have no idea.
Wings. And there was an incredible sort of like incantation around that pool.
With a whole group of dancers who are all women of color, right?
Yes, they're all women of color. They were wearing basically robes
like
or togas.
Like Greeks.
Yeah, like a toga.
What's that called?
Toga.
A toga.
They were wearing sort of Greek-inspired togas, all in colors from the Rose Garden. So different shades of pinks and reds and oranges. And it was gorgeous. The whole scene was stunning, really stunning. And
they were dancing.
They were dancing. They were doing different kind of gestures that reference like, cramping, or like when you're cramping, or when you're like literally shedding layers of blood from your uterus.
Yeah.
Honestly, man, obviously this shit happens. We all know this.
Now you know, listener. But never knew before, and now you know.
There was also, so the idea for Wofford was all the ways in which women pad themselves, literally padding, but also like emotional padding. And so there was a part where
they're using selfie sticks.
She handed out, Jennifer Wofford was like the lead of the temple. Mm-hmm. What would you call that?
The priestess. The high
priestess. Exactly. Thank you. Handed out selfie sticks to all of the dancers. And so they were all taking pictures. There were some really incredible moments in the performance that were unplanned. Like a moment, like you were saying, I think that your mother recorded, Kate, where a turkey walked by, right? I didn't see the turkey. There's a wild turkey. They're doing some performance, and then this like big ass turkey strolls by, which is amazing. There was another scene where there's a walk of like mothers of the year or something, where there's like multiple bricks on along this walkway have women's names with the year that they were the mother of the year. Somehow I have no idea how you get nominated for that. But while they were doing a performance to, I think it was they were doing Dancing to Putting on the Ritz, that really dun 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 dun, that whatever that song is.
Putting on the Ritz.
Exactly. There was an empty baby stroller. It was so hysterical. So it's like, there's this empty baby stroller on this walk of mothers of the year, and they're doing the song about, they're dancing the song on Putting on the Ritz, and it was so ironic and funny, and you couldn't plan those things, It was sort of like, where's the baby? Where's the mother? What's happening? Anyhow, it was incredibly entertaining. Wofford is, I think, a genius, artistic genius. Love her. The other performance, also by SOEX, was Constance Hockaday's You Make a Better Wall Than a Window,
yeah,
which
we just recently
talked about that, I think, in our last episode or two episodes ago.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say anything about now that you have some time between? Did you get a tattoo of it?
I mean, just sort of like the agency that she's taken for herself, but also just to give to everyone else that, you know, that we have certain rights as a citizenry, right? The public, the water is part of our public right to some degree, and that we can take action to actually, you know, help determine how the water gets used or how we use it or access it. And that just because there's big, huge power brokers also using the water, that they're not, you know, they're not the only ones that are making those decisions, obviously, and that we have every right to it as well. And so we just have to use our voices. And I just, you know, I think that's a really important lesson or a really important message for so many areas in all of our lives and so many political issues and social issues and
totally
just everything. So I feel like that is like probably what resonates with me the most, and that can be applied to anything.
The last one?
There's one more. There is that one show at Haynes Gallery
Big tall faces.
The big tall flat bronze faces that I just thought were really interesting. That's kind of it. I mean for me it's just kind of like the wonder of making things. Like, I'm not a maker in that way, and so I'm always just like, how do they do that? It's crazy. It's so bizarre. Anyhow, I was excited to see them. It felt like something new for me to see. And it was pleasing in that way.
Right.
And like a ear, they were very eerie, but also somewhat beautiful and quiet in this sort of contemplative way. But also, I don't know, it was just an interesting experience. Oh, right. So my epilogue.
Oh,
is that what it's called?
I forgot about your epilogue.
My epilogue is that in kind of trying to work out the list, like the top eight for this year, I was sort of sifting through tons of exhibitions and performances and events that I missed, that I shouldn't have missed. I was just like, what the fuck? I can't believe that. So I feel like this list is the top eight of the things that I saw and really appreciated for different reasons, but also not to say that they're the best that happened necessarily in the Bay Area, obviously.
Same for mine too.
You know, that I recognize that I missed a lot of things that I think were also really worth recognizing or worth noting. And that next year, I'm going to try to fucking go out more. Because I could definitely hear or imagine some people listening to this list and be like, you guys missed these three shows. Fuck you. I don't know. Like, I know that there are so many other spaces that are doing amazing things. And so I just feel bad not also representing them in some way. And also recognizing that one space got a lot of my attention this year. And I'm sorry about that. And also not sorry, because they were great performances.
Eight or so talks that I thought were really good this last year. So I'll have links to the ones I can find in the underworld. Maybe I'll even have little clips from them. Okay, number one, Genesis Peorage at CCA was super awesome, except it went on forever. But rightly so, because it was a very illustrious career. Genesis, like, invented industrial music.
Okay.
And talked about coming up in England and making shit in warehouses and sawing guitars apart and making new musical instruments and terrifying sounds, and played all this crazy, all records, brought in all vinyl records and played them on a turntable to demonstrate a full body experience.
And so we thought, let's try and make music. But none of us play anything. Doesn't matter. John Cage says it doesn't matter. So let's just do it anyway. And we started to record in the loft of the house. We'd also just discovered where we could get hash, so we were also smoking hash up there. That probably helped us to be encouraged to experiment. And there we were, playing with different instruments we found lying around, old maracas, a guitar that had the neck broken so you could bend it and it would make weird noises. Then somebody taught me that you could get a kitchen knife, put it on the edge of the table and hit it and then move it in, it would go brrrr. So we thought, oh, we can make music. And we did.
Anyway, it went on forever. I did have to leave a little bit early, but it still made the list because it was like no other lecture I've ever seen. A body of work that I knew almost nothing about. And I really was expecting her to talk about her work with Lady J, And that never came up, which is super weird. So Julia Bryan Wilson gave a really good talk at the Cadence.
Did she now?
About this artist, I forget his fucking name, who put a call out to kidnap one of the Rockefellers who was on the board of MoMA. And I think the guy got arrested by the FBI, and it brought up this whole contentious issue about when is art something to be taken seriously? And when is it like something that is almost in the realm of fantasy where it's something that you can't be prosecuted for? Like, he wants it to be art to keep him from legal repercussions, but he wants it to be a serious thing in terms of its political repercussions. I thought that was a great talk. Weird talk that happened at CCA. Sylvia Lavin. She's like an architectural theorist. And I didn't know I don't know shit about architecture.
I didn't know what the hell that meant.
It might be way more interesting. Really weird and interesting talk about the pervasive creative space architecture, like the tech office, and how that has become like the, what's it called, boilerplate. Like everything's like that now. And she went into a whole history about it, about spaces that are supposed to make you a creative person just by being in the space.
In fact, everything is becoming creative space. And unlike junk space, which is underdesigned and under-effective and under-considered, you might think of creative space as exactly the opposite. It's over-designed, over-saturated with emotional implications, and holds out all kinds of promises, not just that it contain creativity, but that it produce creativity in you.
Almost no other time in like architectural history has there been like spaces that are supposed to like make you creative, like incite that. Caroline Woolard gave a talk for the Art Research Center at Berkeley, which we love so much because it's Shani Jaxie. She has a project called BFA, MFA, PhD. And so her talk was a little bit dry, broke down like all the data around artists, like something crazy, like 50% of artists that actually make all their money off of their artwork have no art degree, which that always is shocking to me.
Yeah.
Or might not have a degree, like a bachelor's degree at all. That was a really good talk and a really interesting website. And now she's doing some weird like real estate investment thing where like they're trying to create like a artist owned building. She was visiting from New York City.
Right.
Jennifer Gonzalez gave a talk right at the beginning of the year, and I talked about it on the show. Called The Cartographies of Democracies. It was another talk that might have been a little dry. She always makes me think about shit that I would never think about otherwise. So it was all about, she like gave a few illustrations of different art projects that are working with a geographical location and working with the idea of democracy. Like one was this artist, I think it was Carlos Mota, did a project where he interviewed all these different people in South America who their country had been like fucked with by the U.S. Jennifer Gonzalez, have a link to that in the underworld. Here's one for the ages. Also SFAI, Johnny Hershey. You know, and a lot of it's just on the strength of his work. It's so funny and interesting, and it's a video.
But he also just has, I think, a really good way of
presenting
the work. Absolutely. And himself. He's so deadpan. And
I learned about Don Quixote.
Has anyone read Don Quixote out there? Anyone? Okay, two people. Everyone read it. There's fart jokes in it, right? Right, and there's sex jokes, and it's slapstick comedy. It's like the original kind of Laurel and Hardy routine. That's where it came from. And it was the first novel in Western literature. Do you guys know that? And the structure is super postmodern. It's amazing. And in fact, between book one and book two, it turns into kind of a reality TV show because everyone's read book one. In between that time that the second book's coming out, there were imposters writing book two. It was so popular. And so when book two came out, Cervantes had to kind of set it up like, this is the real one. And basically he had scenarios where people set up little pratfalls for Sancho and Don Quixote. It's amazing. Anyway, I recommend it. But I love it because they play around with the idea of truth and reality and the idea of fiction being just as important as truth.
So good job, Johnny Hershey. Another one that you also went to, Maysoon, was the talk that Jonathan Katz gave about AIDS and art in America.
Yep.
Fucking awesome.
I thought that was incredible.
It included, he talked about this one piece.
Here's a sculpture by Scott Burton. Two-part chair initially sat among a group of other chairs in a New York office tower lobby, seemingly an example of the kind of bland corporate art that was a feature of the 80s boom era. Inoffensive, apolitical, updating but not necessarily challenging the minimalist aesthetic that still dominated the art world. But look at it again. Do you see how this chair insinuates gay sex? Anal intercourse, in fact. Unmarked even as one sat in it. Ostensibly, innocently occupying the center hall of repressive authority, two-part chair perfectly captures, encapsulates, that strategic thinking that is one legacy of the art of AIDS.
Oh man, that was my favorite part. It was like the super, super minimal corporate looking,
fabricated. What was the term he used to talk about a lot of this work? Not incognito, but
they were infiltrating the museum like a virus.
Yeah.
Like takes over a body. Yeah. And I thought that was just super poetic and super awesome. Yeah. And there was one part in the talk where he talked about how if you want a real laugh, you should read like Foucault's response to Barthes thing about like,
and we're all like, really?
And he's like, well, if you want my kind of laugh. I shook his hand after and he was chatting with
people. He was a very nice person.
An incredibly just generous, awesome person.
Yeah.
Wore a great pair of pink trousers. And then my last one is a joint talk that Rachel Higgins and Nick Lally gave at Real Time and Space. Mm-hmm. And they're from out of town. I think they used to live here. I forget. But anyhow, Nick Lally did all this research about the place Real Time and Space. This is not nepotism because I was not a studio artist there at the time that I went to the talk.
Sure you weren't, Kate.
And he gave all this history that was really amazing about the printing people that used to be in that building. He like did all this history research into them and how they had like weird secret club meetings and all this. And Rachel Higgins was an awesome artist from New York who does work about dead malls. Like she went and had a show in an empty mall. Oh. Like that only had three stores still going. So she rented out one of the stores and had like performances and all kinds of weird stuff in like this like abandoned zombie mall. Yeah. And made sculptures about like based on different mall fixtures and things like that. Malls, dead malls are really in right now. Also vaporwave. Have you heard of vaporwave, Maysoon?
No.
It's also like dead mall aesthetic. It's
what
like
is vaporwave?
It's an aesthetic. It's also a kind of music. All I know about it is if you look it up.
Is it for like stoners? It makes me think that it's like stoner art. Like new wave, but vaporwave.
It's like stoners, but if you're going to like also pop a Zanny bar.
Is this interesting to you?
Totally.
From a sociological point of view?
Yeah. I all this stuff. It's like, you know, I feel like there's all these movements that have a huge effect on art, like fine art, but they like are underground weird like nightclub and stuff movements first and then kind of like bubble up into other parts of our culture. Right. Like, you know what steampunk is?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what C-punk is?
Mm-mm.
So that comes, it's like all coming out of like all these like cyberpunk, steampunk, all this stuff.
Right.
So C-punk was like mermaid. Like if you take steampunk but go mermaid with it. And so everyone has like teal hair and like weird colored fishnet stockings and you're like a mermaid.
Why C though? Oh, C, S-E-A.
Yeah.
Not letter C.
Right. And then I think vaporwave comes out of C-punk. And so it's like kind of taking some similar color palette, but going into the digital world. And so like, and not just digital now, but like retro digital. So if you look up vaporwave.
Damn.
You're going to find a lot of like Windows 95 references and a lot of those kind of colors and like old kind of pixelated video game, but like Miami Vice kind of stuff. And then also for some reason, marble busts. I'll have a link to that to a Google image search for vaporwave because it might blow your mind. Or it might not. You'll be like, God, Kate, Grandma, vaporwave's been around since 2013.
Should we close out with happy holidays and shit or just ignore that?
We don't acknowledge holidays. All right. So since this will be the last episode before the new year, happy new year. if you follow the Gregorian calendar, which you don't have to. I hope everybody's doing their best out there.
Don't get a cold.
Offset your carbon footprint by planting plants everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm. Maybe get a solar-powered backpack.
What does that do?
A backpack with solar panels so that you can charge your phone through solar.
Oh, fascinating.
Instead of, you know, just a little offset. Just a little teensy-weensy way to do that.
Great one.
And
fight white supremacy.
Make a snowman or woman if you can, because I'll miss doing that this year.
I'll make you one.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Will you put eyes and nose on it?
You bet I will.
Cool. Can you take a picture?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Anyhow, from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. In between. This has been Congratulations, Pine Tree. Happy New Year, everybody.
Boop, boop.